Hello, everybody. This is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman. We are back for the 53rd, count of 53rd, Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition Zoom call, the GREEP Zoom call. We are co-convened by myself, Sluggo Wasserman, and Joel Siegel in North Carolina. We're engineered by the great Mike Hirsch, along with Steve Caruso in Central Ohio. We are, you know, I don't know what we were talking about a year ago, but it's just getting, this agenda has gotten more and more packed. We are a nonpartisan discussion group dealing with the issues of election protection. And we are also broadcast on the Pacific, on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM, every Thursday, Eastern time at 5 p.m. And it's a joy and a pleasure to be with everybody. We have 65 people so far on the line, many of whom are familiar and many of whom are new. So it's great to keep this going. And unfortunately, the issues have gotten even more intense than we would have dreamed of a year ago. We started April 27th. If you had said that the following June, we'd be talking about a massive disenfranchisement campaign in virtually every state in the country, with laws being passed already to suppress the vote, that would have been, I don't think anybody would have been surprised, actually, but we certainly would not have been happy about it. We have a very full agenda today. We're going to start with Charles Moreland talking about our upcoming march, the Dream March in Washington, D.C., August 27-9. We're going to talk to Ray McClendon and Gloria Tanubu in Atlanta about the ongoing Georgia Miracle Project, which is quite amazing, and being engineered by Mike Hirsch. Thanks so much. And along with Steve Caruso, and Steve Rosenfeld may join us, I'm not sure, but certainly Joel Siegel has been a part of it ongoing. We talk, Rich Pasita is going to talk to us about the impact of the failure of the to come up of a bipartisan deal in the Senate to come up with a commission. You know, it's quite amazing to talk about a bill that comes before Congress that fails by a vote of 53-35. I mean, it passed by 18 votes, for God's sakes, but it's still thought to be failed. And we're joined by Bob Fetrakis in Columbus, Ohio, and a great Bob will be on the Mount Rushmore of election protection activists. We're going to talk about Texas, where there was a walkout. We're going to quote Arnold Schwarzenegger on gerrymandering. He has his quote was in the New York Times today, actually. We need to touch on the failure of the 2020 census, which is critical. We're going to talk about Arizona with Ray Lutz. We're going to continue discussing our proposed voter bill of rights. Also, the New York Times ran quite an incisive piece about the role of the Supreme Court in election rights. You have to remember that the last two chief justices, an ephemeral term, at least where justices are done, both John Roberts and before him, William Rehnquist, were made their careers denying people the right to vote. So it's a very full agenda. I see Tatanka. We're joined by Tatanka Bricka from the Indigenous community. Joel Siegel, you want to pipe in here?
I'll talk to you later.
Joel?
Yeah. James Fukuda is going to give a report too on the Georgia Miracle work.
Oh, good. James, you'll join us on the Georgia Miracle. That's great. So let's get rolling. We'll start right now. I do want to send out my not condolences, but solidarity with LeBron James, who has become one of the great election protection activists, actually. He funded, by the way, or helped fund a two-part documentary on the slaughter, the mass slaughter, racist slaughter in Tulsa in 1921, one of the little-known realities of American history. But the Lakers did go down because of the injury to Anthony Davis. I don't know what's happened this year, man. So many injuries. I hope all of you out there who are playing in the NBA will be a little careful as we go forward. Well, let's start now with Charles Moreland in D.C. Talk to us, Charles, please, and then we'll go to James and Ray and Gloria about the Georgia Miracle. But Charles, what's the latest on the big march in Washington, D.C. for D.C. statehood, green jobs, and justice?
Well, first, I want to introduce...
Charles, you unmuted? Yes.
I'm unmuted, right?
Yes, you're good.
First, I want to introduce to everybody the first rendition of our logo for the Dream March on Washington.
Wow, that's great.
So we're making a lot of progress. I want to direct everybody real quick. If you can later on, go to our website. We're beginning to put up information on the website about the march. And I want to thank everybody for the suggestions that have been made over the last couple of weeks as we have developed our website. We took the risk of pretty much building it live so everybody could see it. But we got some great suggestions from Election Protection Coalition and especially with Andrea and Tatanka,
yes,
and others, Joel, as we developed it. But we've had several meetings and discussions with the U.S. Park Service. Right now, there's nobody that's applying for the sites that we've asked for. We're going to hold three different events. One is going to be in front of the Capitol. It's going to be the organized by the DC Veterans for Statehood. And we're forming a national alliance of veterans for DC statehood. So they're going to rally at the Capitol. And then they're going to march from the Capitol to the mall, to the National Mall. We're also going to be organizing a rally at Freedom Plaza for DC residents. And they're going to march from Freedom Plaza to join us at the National Mall. So the Park Service has been very, very helpful and very positive. Of course, they have some concerns about the number of people that are going to be allowed to gather at the Capitol. But there are some options. 5,000 they suggest, but they might stretch it to 25,000. And that is actually on the Capitol grounds because of security concerns. We're going to have, of course, the National March. That's going to be on the 28th and the 29th. The 29th is going to be mostly faith-based organizations and people who want to participate in a early Sunday kind of a prayer breakfast situation. On the 28th, we're hoping to be able to join forces with Reverend Al Sharpton and the National Action Network. The Park Service, in fact, suggested that since they may have as many as 150,000 people. But our negotiations are a little bit ahead of National Action Networks with the Park Service. And we expect to have the permit in place late June or early July. Of course, we have until the end of July, July 28th. They want the permit to be approved by 30 days before the actual event. So we're working with the Park Service, the DC Metropolitan Police, and that's going along pretty good. So we want to ask everybody to go online at our website. I will post it in the chat, but it's www.douglascommonwealth.us. And there is a link to sign on to volunteer, make donations. We're very pleased to have Andrea working with us to develop a democracy site in Washington, D.C. We're moving ahead with that. I expect to have the proposal are ready by the end of this week for that. So that's moving up, moving along. And that's the take on the march. Of course, it's going to be also we're going to, for those people who can't come to Washington, D.C., we're going to ask people to organize Zooms. But we're going to have all those instructions up for ways to participate in the march. Of course, it's a three-pronged approach with a coalition that consists of DC statehood supporters, green job supporters, and justice supporters. So we're gonna ask everybody, we have a list of green jobs and Harvey is heading up that group. We're gonna ask everybody to kind of work together to pull this coalition under one umbrella. It's a great opportunity for progressives from these three movements to come together and demand justice. We're not marching just to march, there's a purpose. We want the bills and legislation passed, DC statehood bill. And so we're gonna ask everybody, all the speakers to show how the three issues come together and how they will help the progressive movement.
Fantastic, absolutely fantastic. So does anyone wanna chime in and ask questions about this particular march? I mean, gonna be a fantastic event. And I know Howie Hawkins will be part of the, doing the storefront there because he's got one in Syracuse. Anybody else? Have a hand.
Yeah, hi. This is Dr. Laura. I can't raise my hand for some reason on the Zoom.
Okay.
Charles, there, you know, when is Trump going to be there? Because there's some chatter about, you know, some violence against some Trumpista violence. So are you concerned about that? I mean, the National Guard kind of got relieved of their duty in Washington, D.C. Is there any talk about, you know, beefing up security?
Well, the Park Service is going to provide all the security, and they have assured us that they will be enforced. And I felt very comfortable with what the Park Service had to say about that, as well as the DC Metropolitan Police Department. I have really no concerns about that. They are secure with us and what we're gonna do. And I don't anticipate, I don't see any real movement as Harvey said, and I think he's very serious. Donald Trump may have a handful of people there, but I don't think they're gonna stop us. We're gonna be there to demand justice, green jobs, and statehood. And nobody's gonna stop us or intimidate us, quite frankly.
Good for you. Good for you. Joel Siegel?
Yeah. First of all, I'll be bringing my BB gun from when I was 12 years old.
I wouldn't, actually.
Charles, I want to thank you because what you're doing is so important. There hasn't been a national demonstration to push back on voter suppression, despite all the different states that have gone fascistic. Number two, I really like the way that you're going to be pulling together the different movements because typically people say, stay in their silos. And that's not going to work against the right wing, which they've been united since the 80s. So just you're a hero for taking this on. Just thank you so much.
Well, look,
I wish I could take all the credit for this, but quite frankly, you and Harvey came up with the idea, and I just thought it was just a great opportunity because statehood is like motherhood.
So nobody,
anybody can sort. And I don't think anybody is going to support the continuation of taxation without representation. And it's a great opportunity to unite all of these three you know, movements, green jobs, green planet, and justice under one umbrella. Brilliant, brilliant idea, Harvey. You know, if you know, I might try to take all the credit for it at some point, but for right now,
Harvey, it's all yours, bro. It's all yours. You can have it. And I think that we need to bring some tea to dump in the reflecting pool. Okay, not product. You know, tea, actual tea.
That's a great idea. You know, when I was U.S. Representative, Jesse Jackson and myself, I'll tell you all this story real quick. We used to take, we were bold. We used to take a big pot of container of tea and force our way into the IRS building and dump tea. Well, there came a time when we were burning our tax returns in front of the IRS, and a lady from the Gray Panthers Association said, Representative Moreland, can I burn my tax returns too? I said, of course. She reached in a bag. She must have had 20 years of old tax returns. She put them on the fire. They exploded. Jesse Jackson turned and ran and got in his limousine. And he said, Charles Moreland, you're the craziest person I've ever met.
So, well, yeah, I'll tell you that. That is one thing that would attract Trump if he could come and burn his tax returns. He'll be there in a minute. This is wonderful, Charles. Anybody else have some? Jeffrey, real quickly, please, if this is about the march, and this will be your one time, so go for it.
It is about the march, but remember, do it the way Martin Luther King did it, you know, peacefully and nonviolent, because if any of those following act aggressively, they could be perceived as the bad guys.
We will definitely be nonviolent, and thank you for that. That's absolutely essential. I got to do my calls to Greenpeace this week, and we'll round up a solar panel and bring that to the White House, and maybe we'll install an offshore windmill in the Potomac. That would be fun too. Charles, this is very, very exciting. We're going to have weekly reports from you as we proceed. It's not all that far off. I mean, here we are in the middle of June already, or early June, and it's a couple months away. So we're going to be working. And I'm very, very happy to hear we're going to be tied in with Al Sharpton and that march. That'll be a big plus. So
we're working on it. So pray for us. One last thing. I want to thank Tatanka for joining us with our boycott to end taxation without representation. This was how we first got started, Harvey. Of course, once you brought this great idea on board, we decided to push that aside. But Tatanka has been very, very helpful. And we're going to give you progress reports on that. We're going to launch the boycott approximately 30 days before the march.
Okay, cool, excellent.
Right, Tatanka?
Go ahead, Tatanka. Do you want to say something, Tatanka?
No, got nothing to add. It's just a pleasure working with the team.
Excellent. Well, it's great to have you on board, and certainly to have the Indigenous community on board. We're up to 80 people on the call. Elsa Schaefer has talked about a phone bank in the West Virginia. We're going to talk about a mansion and the filibuster in a few minutes. We do want to get into now with James and Ray and Gloria to the Georgia Miracle. But Charles, you'll be joining us every week. And you had another call during the week on this march. Did you want to? In a previous call, we put up a Zoom link. Are you still doing an additional call every week on this march? You're muted again. Charles, you're muted.
We will resume our Monday briefings next week.
Okay.
We hope to have some the plans in order for that next briefing, but that's Monday at 8 o'clock p.m. We'll send the Zooms out. And I want to thank everybody from the election protection, from Progressive Democrats of America for joining. We've had some great suggestions and some great help. We ask more people to join us on Mondays. We'll send invitations out to you, Harvey. Maybe you can send them.
Yes, of course. I want to point out that and Bob Futreka's slot here, there's a picture of Suzanne Patzer. So Bob has gotten a lot better looking, but that's Suzanne with us. So, okay. We're going to go to the Georgia Miracle now. Gloria, Ray, and James. Thank you so much, Charles, and we'll continue with that. Gloria, Ray, James, who wants to start on the Georgia Miracle and what's happening?
Oh, let's see. Ray is going to defer to Gloria and James.
Okay, Joel, thank you. Hey, Gloria, how are you? Good to see you.
Good. Good evening, everyone. How are you?
How are you?
Good, good. So I'm just going to just be very brief. We're very excited about the interviewing process. Ray has been carrying the load on that, and I'll be picking up on that myself this Wednesday. I'm going to be interviewing two groups, one from Southwest Georgia, led by Shirley Sherrod, and they focused on 14 or so counties in rural Southwest Georgia. And they use the old school way of relational organizing to reach out to people. And so we're gonna be very excited to hear what they had to say, the lessons learned and all of that on Wednesday. And also on Wednesday, I'll be interviewing another group called Young Mobilizers. They are part of the Organize to Mobilize group out of the Metro Atlanta area. And the main leaders are young people. Many of them are in high school. And they were very active in the 2020 and 2021 elections, mobilizing high school students, college students, people in the local metropolitan Atlanta area. So you have on the one hand, an organization in Southwest Georgia that's been around for 60 years, Southwest Georgia Project. And you've got and they use, you know, the old school way of reaching out to people in rural areas for the most part, I believe. And then you've got these young mobilizers and who organized to mobilize in the Metro Atlanta area who reached out to tens of thousands of people who are young. And we had Latinx people involved in that effort as well as African Americans. So it's gonna be a very good interview. So I'm excited about doing my series of my first series of interviews. And so I just wanted to say that we're going to be doing those on Wednesday. And I want to thank Mike for being so helpful and so cooperative and helping us to organize and schedule these interviews. He is just been great. And we want to thank Mike Hirsch for all that he's doing for us.
Fantastic. Tatanka, did you want to jump in on that before you get to James?
Yeah, I just wanted to tell Gloria, I've spoken to folks at the Dolores Huerta Foundation about what we're doing, and they have a brown bag thing that they do with people around the country that are doing the grassroots relational organizing that Dolores has been doing her whole life. And she said it'd be great to team you guys up. So maybe we could be in touch and I can help make that happen. You can have a conversation with Dolores and vice versa.
Wonderful. Can you share that information with Joe Siegel or
sure.
So that we can connect?
Sure, I'll do that.
Great.
Okay, thanks. Okay.
James Fukuda, did you want to jump in, James? You're muted, James. James, you're muted. Here, let's get you unmuted here.
Hello?
Yeah, okay, good.
Okay. So they asked me to speak to just talk about the mundane stuff, but we came up with two names. One is a 501c3, and that's called Lift Every Voice for Democracy.
I love it.
So I even found public domain performances of Lift Every Voice and Sing. So hopefully we can engineer having the song start every time someone clicks on the website. The domain is secured, and the IRS hasn't started spitting up blood yet when they got the 501c3 forms for that one. And then the companion company is Every Voice, Every Vote, which is a 501c4. So that would be allowed to advocate and to also make donations to political to political campaigns, although the concept is to make the donations to get out the vote drives. That domain name is also secured. We have logos in process. And I've started reaching out to corporate America. So it's a little premature, but it sounds like we will have branded Skittles bags to give out on all of those election lines.
Fantastic, fantastic. Rebecca and then Susan Shamblin.
Hi, everyone. I just really quickly, and thank you for the amazing work. I just want to give a big shout out to a Georgia activist, a grassroots activist who's on with us finally. Her name is Yvette Martinez. And if anybody's on Twitter and knows about the tendrils that go around getting information everywhere, she is phenomenal. She's from Muskogee County outside of Columbus. And she is somebody I would really like to get in touch with this group, in particular with the Georgia Miracle, as well as with Andrea, which I will, and Elsa, very much so, which I will do. So welcome, Yvette, and Joel, for sure. So welcome, Yvette, and if you're cool with it, go ahead and drop your email in the chat. Otherwise, I'll get those things out privately to everyone. Welcome. Thanks.
Thank you. Joel Siegel, and then
I want to thank Tatanka because, you know, this connection with Dolores is terrific. And I want to thank James because he single-handedly has literally put this whole, you know, foundation together. And we're soliciting board members right now. We just got the former mayor of Charlotte to agree to be on our board. We're looking at probably up to 20 board members so we can raise the money that we need to hire organizers. You know, Gloria and Ray, Mike, shout outs for historically important work. You know, we are working on the book. We're working on a documentary. I've been talking to documentary filmmakers. And Harvey, if it wasn't, you know, for your leadership, none of this would happen. I will tell you that in a meeting I have with the former mayor of Charlotte, she wants to talk with Gloria and Ray because there's some GOTV superstars in North Carolina who want their help. They want to understand the Georgia Miracle. So we're already making we're just getting started, but we're already making a difference because people want to know what happened in Georgia so it can be done in North Carolina where I live.
So basically, to be sure everybody's clear, Ray and Gloria and James have been participating in along with Mike and Steve have been participating in interviewing by Zoom a series of activists in Georgia who have been instrumental in pulling off what happened in the swing in November of 2020 and the two Senate seats in 21, and then carrying on to show that in a red state, about as red as they get, Georgia, that grassroots organizing can make a huge difference. And so the Zoom interviews will be transcribed and then compiled for a book and a documentary film. Is there anything I missed about that needs to be shared? Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, given that this country is rapidly has a right-wing movement that's Republican that really is promoting fascism. So if you say there's an election that was stolen, but it wasn't stolen, then you're gonna have a phony, bogus recount in Arizona. What people are saying is that what's really happening is that the Arizona strategy is more of a strategy related to the next presidential election, which is quite scary. So if we're gonna mitigate, you know, voter suppression, then we're going to have to dramatically increase the voter turnout from Blacks, Latinx, Asian Pacific Americans, and students. And right now, what we're sitting on is like E equals MC squared without the radioactive fallout. And, you know, this is, I don't know anyone who's doing what we're doing, but if anyone has any ideas about this project, I hope that they can share them either in the chat box or raise your hand, because we're going to need grassroots support across the country, because we want to have paid organizers in the swing states. That's our big goal, to teach the Georgia miracle. But that's pretty much it.
Susan Shamblin, you had a hand?
Susan? Yes. Yes, thank you. I would like to know what's being done in Georgia to address the voter suppression being done because the people don't have the required ID. Is there, you know, work on the ground to get them the ID? What's being done to address that part of voter suppression?
Gloria or Ray, do you want to answer on that?
Is Ray on the call?
He was.
Yeah, he's on the call.
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead, Ray. What's happening with the ID requirement in Georgia?
Yeah, there are several civic engagement groups that are currently putting together analyses of the entire SB 202 bill that was signed by Kemp. And we're breaking it down so that we will have responses to inform, educate voters across the state throughout the summer and going into the municipal elections in the fall. One of the big items, as you just suggested, was the voter ID. And we're putting programs together now to assist those primarily in the rural areas where the major problem is with ID, because of the disproportionate smaller number of locations that are available to get the ID. So that's really where it's going to be a major push outside of the metro area, but it has begun to be addressed and will be addressed throughout the summer going into the fall municipal campaigns.
And Elsa Schaefer has jumped in chat, says that Democracy Centers, which Andrea Miller is helping to set up, are teaching people about the ID needs and trying to get the voters ready for the next election. So I got to say one thing, this right-wing campaign against universal suffrage has really aroused a movement. I will mention now, I'm sure everybody saw what happened in Texas, where the Democrats walked out of the legislature and were able to prevent at least some of the anti-democracy legislation from passing. They expect to come back in the fall, but we'll see. I never thought that I would look forward to a gubernatorial campaign by Matthew McConaughey, but it may be interesting. Who knows? We'll see. But that has gone. Elsa's on the stack. Elsa, do you want to speak?
Apologies. It really was to say that, but to say the point about democracy centers, which we're also setting up in other voter suppression states as well. But the cool thing, and Ray, I'm so glad you summarized that. The cool thing is to make sure that everybody and his brother who does have a leg to stand on in a grassroots arena in any of these states is out there teaching people and making sure they engage and that they know to teach other people about what those ID needs are.
Great. Of course, in Texas, you can get a ballot with a gun license, but not a student ID. So that kind of says it for American democracy at this moment, but hopefully we can overcome that. Charles Moreland has asked people to volunteer in the chat room. Douglas Commonwealth has two S's, by the way. So this Texas moment, I will say one thing that, and Bob Fetrakis is on the line and can testify this. When we started discussing blowing the whistle on voter suppression and things like what we're seeing now back in 2000 and 2004, nobody was paying attention to it. And now when I go through my daily excursion through the LA Times and the New York Times, the San Francisco Chronicle and whatever, there's an article like every day about this. So people, we have reached a certain critical mass. You know, as they, as Gandhi said, first they laugh at you, then they yell at you, and then you win. So hopefully we're getting towards the third part. Gloria Tinubu, please.
I just wanted to mention what Joe Manchin did over the, you know, in terms of his editorial. I don't know if anyone has mentioned that or when the appropriate time to discuss that. Go
ahead. We'll segue from that into HR 1 and 4. So go ahead, Gloria, please.
No, I just wanted to say I am just so tired of him throwing a wrench into everything. And I don't know what they plan to do. It's just annoying. He's pretty much killed, you know, the bill and given the Republicans, no reason to do anything.
James Fukuda, you got a hand?
Yes, I just wanted to say that in case it hasn't been said before, we are in a slow moving war, folks. We are in a slow moving war. If they could put people who looks like Ray or Gloria or maybe even me in a box and send us back someplace where our ancestors came from 400 years ago, they would surely do it.
Yeah.
But I'm from the Bronx. I know that you're recording this, so use your imagination, folks, but they ain't doing it. And we are going to win this fight.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. One thing very quickly as a historian, people always roll their eyes when I preface my remarks with that, but the big lie, it's very important, that phrase, the big lie, because there was a big lie in Germany when Hitler came to power. His big lie was that the World War I was really won by the Germans and they were sold out by the Jews and the bankers and stuff like that. So this big lie with a capital B and a capital L that Trump actually won the election, there is historical precedent and it is Adolf Hitler. So we need to be quite aware of that. And James, I'm with you 100%. I am not from the Bronx, but I'm glad you are. Steve Kaiser, you have a hand? You're muted, Steve. Steve, you're muted. Steve?
Okay, I got it now.
You also take the prize for best beard on the call.
Oh, you think so? Yeah, it's about to go.
Yeah. All right, so go ahead. What do you got?
I don't know what can be done about Joe Manchin, whether, you know, maybe a tactic to the Republicans use of primarying people that they don't like the people that have been disloyal to Trump. I don't know what you do about Manchin where you can elect another Democrat from West Virginia. It's such a problematic state that the Manchin might be the best thing we can get out of West Virginia because it's been habitually Republican since Ronald Reagan. So I don't know what can be done about him.
Well, I'm old enough to remember when West Virginia was a solid Democratic state, back in 1960, Kennedy and Humphrey fought over West Virginia tooth and nail. And I think what we have to do is tell Joe Manchin, Biden has to offer Joe Manchin a national university on retraining coal miners to do solar energy in Huntington or Wheeling, and then maybe he'll come around.
Maybe something like that, but they voted for Carter in 1980 against Ronald Reagan, but since then they've been Republican. And it's over environmental issues because if you can't mine coal in West Virginia, there's virtually no economy. But so I thought you had good advice there, Harvey.
Yeah. So thank you about that. Thank you for that, Steve. Joel Siegel?
Yeah. In Congress, what happens basically, if you want to change behavior from a member of Congress, you got to offer them something. And I think if we're going to eliminate the filibuster, you know, Manchin has to get solar panel factory, wind turbine factory, recharging station factory. He has to understand that he's got a lot to gain by going along with the filibuster. On CNN, they're talking about progressives, you know, showing outrage with Manchin. At the end of the day, I think we're going to have to use civil disobedience and protest, you know, which is what Charles is really, you know, organizing, but just because this guy has the name Democrat next to his name doesn't mean anything. I think he's right now, you know, one of the most influential people in the world, but to have one person stop, you know, our march towards democracy and social justice, cannot let that happen, as James was saying. But, you know, when the Affordable Care Act was about to be abolished from the Republican Party, I organized a civil disobedience campaign with Poor People's Campaign and others, and we blocked the entrance way to Mitch McConnell's office. We had 3 days of arrests. It was my first time I've ever been arrested. I used to always leave before I was about to get arrested at any kind of because I was too poor to afford, you know, getting out of jail. But I think the other thing is the labor movement in West Virginia, there has to be organizers in West Virginia that meet with him in his office and say, you know.
Uh-oh, Joel, you're frozen. Joel, you're frozen there.
Harvey, I've got a few ideas on this.
Elsa and then and Ruth. And Joel, when you get unfrozen.
Yeah, they seriously on who Manchin is. And we've heard people from who are journalists in West Virginia and people who are working there on the ground trying to do something. And they report, one, that the RNC is all over, that he's getting more, that all the billboards and ads they see on television and driving by are RNC based, are all anti-HR 1 and S1. That there's no Democratic, or there's no anything happening in West Virginia that they can tell, that the calls to his office are being drowned out with anti-HR1 stuff, and they're gonna kill babies, all this stuff. Manchin does not like Washington. He loved being governor of his beautiful state, West Virginia. He cannot stand the Senate, apparently. He has no intention of running again. We're not holding anything over his head at all. But I think Joel's point about why aren't we in there with green jobs right now? And frankly, because I care about the Medicare for All bill too, why aren't we putting in there Medicare call centers of people taking care of those claims, saying, here's where health insurance can go, you know, down. We need to be putting jobs into West Virginia now. The RNC apparently is all over the billboards, the ads, and phone banking into his offices. We need to get the DNC, whoever has influence with them, James Fukuda, maybe, we'll say that to you. But we also need to do our own phone banking there right now. And everybody says he cares so much about morality. Well, the morality he's caring about, he's hearing about in terms of, oh, don't kill more babies. Well, let's shift that into the morality of taking good care of West Virginians and being able to do what those infrastructure bills are going to be able to do for him, as well as the voting rights bills, but particularly right. Infrastructure bills. That's and good. And I you know, we need to fund Andrea. I have a couple of ideas on that, to do the same phone banking there that we're doing for cinema in Arizona, where we call voters in West Virginia and patch them through immediately to his office. But we also need somebody talking to Biden, and Obama can do that. To get billboards. I mean, the DNC should be playing the billboard ad game as well. Okay. There's nothing more important.
Okay, very good. Good with that. One question, and we'll go to Ruth, and then Charles and Arthur. Art's with us, Art Levine. I've heard that he is in favor of the John Lewis bill, HR 4. And the question is, you know, now that he's essentially looks like he's killing HR 1 or NS 1, whether he would go and switch over and support the John Lewis bill, which is much simpler. And maybe that segue would work. Ruth, Charles, Arthur, and then James. Ruth Strauss?
Yeah, that would be wonderful about HR 4. I actually put phone numbers for his office, for Sinema's office, in the chat. It's way at the beginning, because maybe I'm being passive aggressive, but that doesn't stop me. Apparently, you know, they're getting funding probably from the Koch brothers. is today. I just heard they're getting funding from the Chamber of Commerce, both Manchin and Sinema, because they quote unquote are being nonpartisan, which translates mean being, you know, faux Democrats and pro Republicans. So if you want to call their office and tell them, you know, that we know what's going on and, you know, we'll be glad to primary them the next time around. Those numbers are in the chat at the very beginning. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Ruth, for that. Art Levine?
Yeah. I'm not myself able to get an assignment to write about this, but I don't see, I have a number of people on social media follow me or journalists. What I don't understand is why no major national organizations or rich Democratic donors are stepping up to the plate to spend on ads in West Virginia, just the way this has previously been discussed by Elsa, I believe, or even on the ground organizing. It's completely invisible. And there's no, I know that indivisible is. So what I would, you know, there are some people here who have ties to national, major national organizations, to see if there's a way to motivate or get on the ground grassroots organizing in West Virginia per se. I don't think a guy, I also posted, by the way, a very insightful, the New York Times podcast called The Daily really drills into the mindset of Manchin. It's worth understanding his thinking, how he got there, because then it can help figure out how to possibly persuade him. But in the absence, what I also think, if Steve or other journalists are on the phone, on this call or can be contacted, there ought to be a coverage, which I'm not in a position to do and get paid for, about the complete what appears to be total inaction in terms of donors and major groups over doing a thing regarding pressuring Manchin. Am I misreading what's happening?
I don't know, James Fukuda, did you want to comment on that?
Yes, I mean, that's exactly what got me so interested in working with Gloria and Ray in the first place. The DNC is very, very electronic. They don't really like to get their hands dirty and deal with people on the ground. And this is going to be done by getting people to the polls. Plain and simple.
Yeah.
We have to do that, whether you call it West Virginia. My personal favorite, I don't know that it makes good financial sense, but my personal favorite, after getting Warnock reelected, I'd love to go after Chuck Grassley. He's going to be 90 something years old. He's had his chance to have his say. It's time for him.
I'm not talking about a left-wing primary challenge to Manchin. I'm talking about failure to organize around reforming, at least for voting rights, filibuster with Manchin that doesn't seem to be happening, except, you know, and then there's periodic grousing on the left. But it just seems that nobody with money and organizing muscle at a grassroots level and TV spending is doing much of anything in Arizona.
James, would you want to speak? I mean, I'd love to see Grassley put out the grass myself. So we'll see what happens. So the question then is, will somebody?
Charles has his hand up, Harvey.
Oh, Charles go ahead. Charles Moreland, go ahead, please. You're muted, Charles. All right, can you unmute?
Yes.
There you go, okay.
Joe Manchin, in fact, is a most difficult conundrum for Joe Biden and the Democratic Party. I know that right now there are certainly negotiations with him regarding infrastructure needs of West Virginia. But he stands as really the primary obstacle to statehood, DC statehood. Because of him, we don't even have enough Democrats to pass S-51. And his name comes up, in fact, Tatanka can tell you, and I just got a call today from someone who was suggesting that the primary target in any boycott should be Joe Manchin. Of course, the difficulty there is, what would it look like if we, if the primary target was a Democrat, when you have 50 Republicans who have vowed never to support DC statehood. Manchin has locked onto the 23rd Amendment as the primary obstacle. When that's a non-starter, it's not really an obstacle. It does not require a constitutional amendment. So we are going to consider ways to boycott in West Virginia. One of the things that we're considering, and of course we're going to be looking for all kinds of suggestions, how would a boycott affect Manchin? One of the ways we've thought about is the same kind of boycott that brought the Confederate flag down in Mississippi, and that is when athletes that were considering going to colleges, Ole Miss and other colleges in Mississippi, said they were not going to come to a state that flew the Confederate flag. My daughter graduated from the University of West Virginia, and they hold themselves out as being sports competitors. And so that might help, but yeah, it is a conundrum.
Wow, that's an interesting idea. Gloria, did you have a hand? And then we're gonna go to Julie Weiner, who has something immediate, New York State, and then Rich Presida, who's gonna jump us in with some stuff on the 1-6 commission. Julie, did you wanna jump in? You got a big one in the chat there.
Yes, thank you so much, I appreciate it. The New York State Legislature is about to close up shop for the next 6 months on Thursday. The New York State Senate is poised to pass a wonderful amended hybrid ban bill. It amends, it bans ballot marking device scanners. It demands scanners that read barcodes or QR codes that voters can't verify. It bans thermal paper ballots. So it would effectively prevent the New York State Board of Elections from certifying a very bad touchscreen voting machine, the ES&S Express Vote Excel. Some of you may remember that the Express Vote Excel reversed the results in a outside Philadelphia election. We're trying to prevent certification. Only updated voting machine requirements can prevent certification of the Express Vote Excel or other touchscreen and hybrid voting machines in New York State. The New York State Senate is about to pass this newly amended hybrid ban bill. The New York State Assembly, it is stuck. We need people from all over New York State today, tomorrow, to be calling Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie to demand that he allow a meeting of the Election Law Committee to pass the hybrid ban bill and allow a vote on it. So I can give you Hastie's phone number in a second.
And I assume you're in touch with Howie Hawkins, who's in Syracuse with the Green Party. So Howie's on the line if you guys
Howie, can connect. Yeah, Howie thank Hawkins. You. And Mr. Fukuda just said he would help recruit people to make phone calls. We really need massive phone calls now.
All right, so if you'll post the phone number in the chat, Julie, okay. That would be great.
Okay, thank you so great. Much. Coming up. Thank
all right,
you.
Thank you. Anybody want to jump on that one or should we move ahead? Okay, ahead on the
one. Wait, I'm sorry, Harvey.
Oh, Myla, go ahead.
Julie, could you just repeat, when is the deadline for this?
It's this week, it's Wednesday.
Okay.
The last day the Election Law Committee can meet and the legislature can pass bills. I'm not sure whether it's Wednesday or Thursday. I know they go home Thursday for good, till January.
I'm just wondering whether you've ever tried to coordinate with Sam Cedar on the majority report for getting the word out.
That's a great idea. Well, I will. How do I reach Sam Cedar?
Well, I think the best thing to do would be to email, I'll put it in the chat, majorityreporters@gmail. I think I'll put it in the chat. I'll look for it.
Great.
And,
thank you, Marla.
And also, Nomiki Konsk does kind of
a New York centric political update on YouTube. So
what's the name?
Nomiki, N-O-M-I-K-I, Konst, K-O-N-S-T. And I'll try to put something in the chat, or if you put your email in the chat, I'll get the information to you.
Great.
Okay, jwvoting@gmail.com. Anybody else with ideas? We're getting out a press release today. So
I do, which is New York State Common Cause has been active.
New York State Common Cause is on it. We're part of the Let New York Vote
Coalition. Good, okay. And Lulu Freestad and her support election.
Yes, that's who's working on it. That's who I'm working with. She's getting out a press release today.
All right, great. Great work, all of you. Good luck with that. We still have 80 people on the call. Wonderful. Did anybody have something before we go ahead? Okay. Yes. Who's that?
Joel.
Joel, go ahead, Joel.
Yeah, my internet got knocked off. We have a climate change induced storm here. I think there at some point has to be a discussion. Now, when I bring this point up, often there's very little response, but I'm going to say it anyway. If the progressive movement does not begin a very important conversation about getting out of our silos and creating some kind of a rapid response legislative network, like, you know, when the NRA used to call the Congress for about 4 hours, the phone would ring, right, off the hook. Or let's say there was something that AIPAC did not like. But where I'm very concerned about voter suppression or climate change, if we continue to have thousands of NGOs that are progressive, siloed and not coordinated or connected, I fear for this country, because I think it's like, kind of in a way, it's progressive negligence to continue to be this fragmented where, you know, we're having a discussion about, all right, well, how do we impact Manchin or Sinema? You know, clearly Progressive Democrats of America, I know we're supposed to be nonpartisan, but it's okay to mention an organization with that name in it, has the ability to do that if they really became, you know, much more diverse, multiracial, and more partners. And the executive director is trying to do that. But how are we going to win against a multi, you know, million-dollar right wing that's been connected since Reagan, when we are so, we mean well, but we're just unbelievably fragmented? And here's the answer. That's what this say, you know, this Georgia miracle, the lift every vote. This is what we're trying to do, is connect all these different people across the country, at least for GOTV. But in terms of lobbying and making a point, I think Arthur is completely correct. Anyway, that's it.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We are off the